You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's books and comics show all about Star Trek books and comics. I'm just one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, how are things going for you today?
Well, just finished Gateways a few days ago, the book two, Chainmail. So interesting to talk about that. Haven't really been seen in any book news or anything recently. So I guess we're just kind of in a holding pattern, which is nice, gives us time to catch up on stuff.
Yeah, get a lot of time to catch up on some reading other than Star Trek, plus, you know, just all these old ones and, you know, the few that we got to look forward to. So as we record this, we're just a couple months away from the new James Swallow book. So looking forward to that. And excited to talk about our next Gateways book today. But first, I want to let everybody know how to get in touch with us. You can find all our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at trekfm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, join our listeners-only discussion group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and even what's coming up next. And if you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. And if you have a show you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer like myself and Greg Rosier are for Literary Treks. And lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcast. It's great for us and also helps others find the show. Well, Jonathan, we got just one short comic. It's not that short, I guess, but just one to briefly discuss today, and that's the Warp Your Own Way Lower Decks comic, which came out, I think, towards the end of 2024. Mm-hmm. And this is like a, and I'm sure everybody at this point is aware of it, but we're that far behind, I guess. But it's basically choose your own adventure. But for Lower Decks and in comics. Did you ever read any of the Choose Your Own Adventure books, Jonathan?
I read a few Choose Your Own Adventure kids books, but I'd never known that they had Choose Your Own Adventure comics before. That's a brand new thing to me. That's pretty interesting.
I read some of the books when I was a kid, but yeah, this is like the first comic I've ever seen like it, and maybe there's others, but we'll see. And you know, it's an interesting concept, I think, for Star Trek to do, especially with Lower Decks. I feel like of all of the Star Trek series that we've got, especially in comic form right now, Lower Decks is a pretty good one. But I almost wonder, you know, like Prodigy would actually be a good book series to do, like a choose your own adventure for Prodigy. I think
Absolutely. That would fit perfectly with them.
Yeah. If anybody at Gallery Books is listening, or whoever, you know, does the kids books. But yeah, the Lower Decks one, it was a fun read. It was very brief for me because apparently I chose poorly as I went through, but it was, a pretty fun concept, like I said. And, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler for something that's 6 months old probably at this point, but I blew up the ship. So
what? No, you can't do that.
I wonder where they're going to go from there, but now at some point I'll pick it back up and try some alternate options. I think there's lots of different ways that this could go.
The advantage of that comic is that like it's a comic that you can read multiple different times and literally get a different story every time. I mean, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Exactly. You don't get that a lot from books.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, yeah, we didn't really get a chance to get through any of the other comics, and there's actually a new series of Lower Decks. Apparently they restarted at number one, so we'll get into those hopefully for next time and get caught up on some of those. I started reading those ones, and they look pretty fun, but yeah, we'll save that for next mm-hmm. time. And in the meantime, how about we suit up with our suits of armor or something for chainmail?
We'll put on our chainmail, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So to go read this one.
Well, I'm very interested to know, Jonathan, you were not yet with us when we read the New Earth books for mm-hmm. Literary Treks. And if I'm not mistaken, you have not read those at all, right?
Nope, I have not read them.
So I guess, and I was actually just looking back through my podcast here because I am that well prepared. It's been like it's been like over a year since Matthew yeah. and I talked about these. I think the last one that we did would have been, oh boy, I'm going back a long ways now. The last one was from like September of 2022. So yeah, pretty far back, and I actually don't know the episode number because they're not on the iTunes one. But yeah, go back to September and you'll find one called A Win-Win-Win. That was our last discussion that we did about New Earth. So, you know, just coming into this fresh, this is a brand new crew to you. And, you know, it's even got a new title card on the front, Star Trek Challenger. I guess just kind of what were your initial impressions getting into this book? Did it feel like Star Trek? Is this something, you know, just and did you feel like you were able to pick up what you needed from just what this author was writing? I think she was one of the creators of the New Earth series. Like, did you kind of feel like I'm completely lost? I don't know where we are. Do I really need to read six books to get into this one?
I was a little lost, but I feel like Diane Carey actually did a pretty good job of trying to explain where we were. The first whole third of the book is not on the Challenger, which I think is a bold move, especially like you if you're doing the original series, you don't need to start on the Enterprise necessarily because everybody knows Kirk, Spock, McCoy. Like, everybody knows them. Oh, we're on a planet with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Like, we got it. But to start a new, or a book from a lesser known series, that's part of the Gateways, which you got to imagine that there are people like me who have never read the New Earth series who are going into this blind. It's very bold to start not on the Challenger and on the grave ship, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think she did a good job of explaining where we were. I didn't have a great handle on who all the characters were in the first 100 pages. I needed a little bit of time to kind of get my feet under me, but I at least understood what the situation was. We were on the ship. There are these like statues. There are the are they statues? Are they real? Are they not? They're trying to figure out, you know, where Shakorin and Bonifay are, and they're getting lost on the ship constantly. And I was like, okay, I'm tracking. I felt like, ironically, I felt like I was tracking the beginning of this book more than I was tracking the beginning of One Small Step, and I knew who the characters were in that.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. Yeah, it's funny because it's been over 2.5 years, I guess, you know, kind of doing the math in my head since I read the last of the New Earth books, which was really the one that set up the ship. And I think that book six of New Earth was really with the Challenger and its crew and kind of getting to know Nick Keller. But I actually almost found this book a little bit better of an introduction to the characters, because with New Earth, we had the whole kind of saga of these colonists heading out to the New Earth, to Belterre, you know, their conflicts with the blood and I never knew how to pronounce Kald or Cooled or whatever.
Kald, yeah.
You know, just kind of everything that they were setting up. There's so much world building that had to happen in those first six books. And of course, this book takes place nowhere near Beltair. I mean, it's in the same area, but, you know, not on the planet or anything, which I kind of liked, actually, because it was nice to finally be in space with these people. But I really did like how she reminded the reader, if you've read it before, or even just told us in this book, how cobbled together Challenger is. It's not like a Starfleet issue ship, right, you know, like they took apart all the colony ships and some blood ships, like plumes or spinners, or I don't remember whatever the ship they had, like all sorts of different ships. But, you know, and I actually felt like we just got a lot of time to spend with the characters, you know, between mm-hmm. Keller and Shakurion and Bonifay or Sabrina. What's her last name? Bird or something. Her,
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. But
I don't remember her last name.
Yeah. And it just kind of felt like, to me, like almost what New Earth should have been, or at least the last book of New Earth should have been, because we actually finally got an adventure, and some of the stuff in the New Earth books was just a little out there, even for kind of a sci-fi fantasy kind of thing. And so this one gets out there, and we'll talk about it. But
like, yeah, especially in the third act.
Yeah.
But, in fact, I would describe the first act as being the kind of the horror. Oh no, there's like creepy stuff on the ship, which is very Star Trekian. Mm-hmm. In fact, it kind of reminded me of those comics we were reading a few weeks ago where, what was it? The crew, it wasn't the Defiant, but it was the other crew that was on a ship. And it had like the weird space creatures and stuff. Mm. So, I was like kind of tracking with it there. And then you have the middle section, which is all on the Challenger, which that mm-hmm. was my favorite section in the book, because it felt maybe the most understandable, because it was like the most traditional Star Trek stuff. But then you had the end, which, as you said, just is out there for a Star Trek book. Although there was a scene that I'll save that comment for when we have that scene. But there was a scene that, I'll say this, reminded me of Star Trek V. So I'm excited to talk about that. Yeah. But the middle section personally was my favorite section. Did you have a favorite section in the book?
Yeah, I think once I got into the book, I would agree with you, the middle section, just because it felt the most Star Trek. It was on a ship. It was, there was character development. There was conflict with the characters and everything. And, you know, I felt like it was just, like I said before, like what we really should have gotten in some of the New Earth books, you know, if we're going to set up this new crew. But, you know, I think it's funny because, like, yeah, the first part, you know, really starts in medias res. And so, if, like, mm-hmm. like that's where, as soon as I started reading this, I was confused. I was really wondering how you were. But, I mean, we start on the ship, and, like, the way it was described, it was so, like, fantastical that, mm-hmm. you know, I kept forgetting sometimes it was on a ship, and because they were talking about moss, and they're kind of walking yep. through this boggy mm-hmm. area and everything, which kind of never came back. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think it, you know, later they described that they tried to decorate the ship as best they could to be like home.
Right, but, to be like home. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, like you'd mentioned the horror elements, and I really got that here. In fact, what I was getting was kind of early Star Trek Discovery vibes. Like I'm talking like episode 3, I think it was, when we meet Stamets for the first time and they go aboard the other ship and people are all twisted and everything. Like just mm-hmm. with these corpses and they're mummified, like, but with metal, and like then they're coming alive like zombies or something, and like there was just so much happening. And then we finally find Bonifay. He's like literally strung up with razor wire, like going through him, and if he moves he's gonna like chop himself to pieces, which was horrifying, but also really, like, by the time you get to the end of the book, pretty good setup for kind of, you know, what all is going on. And, you know, you're not kidding too when you say, like, the first third of the book, I mean, like, yeah, we're doing like all of, like, the first, I didn't even know how many chapters take place between this and then with the scenes with Ryuta right. and like the living or whatever. But like on this ship, like, there's so much happening that was action-packed and, you know, horror and fantasy and like kind of everything that you could, you know, ask for in something like this.
And it was one thing I'll give it is it was very detailed world building. It felt like Diane Carey worked really hard to flesh out the various cultures. The blood seemed the most the most prepared culture. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's because she had written them before. And then you also had the Ryota's group, the aliens that were from the past ish, yeah,
from somewhere.
from somewhere. Yeah. They seemed very like the way that their ship had the different biomes and how their ship had the all of its elements. It felt you know, incredibly thorough. And so it didn't feel like, you know, I keep comparing it to One Small Step. One Small Step was very, it was, you know, the world building itself was kind of bland. And then it just was kind of like, oh, well, we just happened to, they just throw stuff in with the world building. Whereas this, it felt like it was natural, a natural part of it. But the horror, the stuff that they do to Bonifé, while being horrifying, is probably not the most stressful thing for him in the book necessarily.
Yeah, probably not.
because in the second portion, you get Shikorian basically trying to I don't know, was his end goal to execute Bonifé or to just imprison, or yeah. I didn't know what his end goal was, but it had to have some kind of punishment. And yeah. You had to feel bad. Bonifay's like, man, I just got out of the frying pan and now you want to throw me into the fire? Really? You just saved me. Can I have like 2 minutes without y'all trying to kill me?
Right. Well, and like, yeah, I mean, to talk about that a little bit, like Bonifé, Shikorian wanted to, he basically felt like Bonifé disobeyed orders because Shikorian told him to stay on the plume that they were on, the ship, the small blood ship that they were on. It sounded like basically like a shuttlecraft or something, but it was like blowing up around them. And I don't even know if we ever knew why, but it was kind of falling apart and was about to explode. And Bonifé saw this grave ship, like they didn't know what it was at the time, but basically beamed them off of it. Even though Shikorian told him to stay. And yeah, like then because of the disobeyed order, like it sounds like in blood culture or military or whatever it is, like it reminded me somewhat of like Cardassian law where you're guilty and we'll have a trial or a hearing about it. But then, yeah, like you're going to get put to death, like which Shikorian kind of held back on telling anybody at first. It was just like he needs to be punished or, you know, whatever it was. But
and he was like so adamant about it that it was like, if you don't, this one action alone would cause this entire connection with the blood, all of them to abandon their posts. They'd all refuse to respect Keller as captain, which in a sense, you know, you kind of understand. Keller is seeming to show kind of a favoritism, or at least not shoring up his strengths. But to me, the strength of a good leader is when to evaluate situations independently. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at this and was like, look, I don't necessarily blame Bonifé for everything. What he's going through is enough of a punishment. We don't need to pile on. And so I did really like that whole, it wasn't political, but like that ship tension where, you know, you're like, no, this one event could unravel the whole crew. And they already were talked about how the crew of the Challenger was like so understaffed anyway.
Yeah.
So you're like, man, they cannot afford to lose anyone. So first, they can't lose Bonifé because they need him at his post, but also they need all the blood at their post. Like Port Keller's in like a near impossible situation.
Yeah. Well, and like, I really liked this part too, because it, I think, accomplished so much for the story. Like, yeah, it really showed Shikorian some growth, I guess, for him, because he's got his ways and his beliefs, but he's also got his people that, you know, in some ways it almost seemed like he was trying to impress. Like, I don't even remember what the other guy's name was, started with a D, but I never figured out how to pronounce it. But he, you know, seemed like he's like, we were on a blood plume. I'm a blood Avedon. He should follow my orders. And Keller was trying to impart in him like, no, I chose you as my first officer. I don't care what ship you were on. You you follow my orders. And I felt like all the stuff with Shakurian and Bonifay as part of part of the story was really for Keller's benefit and his growth. I mean, we definitely saw Shakurian grow, especially by the end of the book when he realizes that they have to work together, and you know, he has to follow his superior, which is Keller. I don't really like the way that Keller went about some of that, but like, you know, at the end of the day, like during all the events of New Earth and the creation of the Challenger and everything, Keller is, I mean, a very young guy, and not ready for command, but kind of one of those people that's like really put in a position that he didn't ask for, but also just that he just wasn't prepared for. And and part of me wondered too if Shakurian was doing this on purpose to kind of like try to get more out of Keller, kind of like what I think her name is Zoa, what she did when she like hit him at one point. But you know, like what I really liked about this was that Keller saw that he really had to, he's been trying to be nice and friendly and everything, and he did have to come to a realization that he was showing favoritism for his Starfleet, or not even Starfleet, but just human crew.
Right.
But you know, this showed that he's got to trust Shakurian. Shakurian's got to trust him. He's got to trust Bonifay. He's got, you know, like everybody's got to trust each other. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with Keller. And I like that all of this, like including this, what kind of seemed almost like a B story with Bonifay and Shakurian, really kind of advanced Keller's character in a lot of ways, I think.
And, you know, it feels kind of right at home with Star Trek, because as you were describing it, I was thinking, man, I could easily see another writer taking this with Voyager, making it Janeway as Keller. Instead of Shakurian, you have Chakotay, and instead you have Tom Paris disobey an order of Chakotay, and then Chakotay being mad and it being like, look, we have all the Maquis, like especially season one Voyager.
Definitely.
Like, we have all the Maquis up here, and you're telling me we can't be trusted? They're not going to obey the Maquis leadership?
Yeah, it's funny because Matthew and Chris have kind of revived the To the Journey podcast. They're doing a rewatch of Voyager, and so they just within the first few episodes of season one right now, and it kind of made me go back and watch those first few episodes.
Nice plug right there.
Exactly. but really, I mean, yeah, like what you're describing, I'm just like, man, like some of this stuff, it's like, oh, if they could have just done more on Voyager, like, you know, I think that first season would have been like really, really good. I mean, it was, you know, pretty good for what it was, but yeah, I don't know, like, I thought, I don't know, the whole Bonifay and Shakurian storyline, I felt like just kind of spoke to a lot of different things in the book, and also, like, you know, Keller is so new that he was agreeing to terms of contracts. He just let the governor of Beltair agree to, like, to negotiate and agree to some terms. He was like, I didn't understand. I didn't read it. I don't know. And it's like, well, that's kind of on you, Keller. But then, you know, then we're learning that the Blood are very rigid in their rules. It's like, it's black and white. There's no gray. It's you broke a vow, basically, and you're going to get put to death.
And there's kind of a, you know, a theme about how Star Trek is all about, you know, getting different type of people to work together and different species, different groups. But at the same time, you have to recognize that sometimes, you know, things like there's worldview differences, essentially. And Keller seems to have a very different worldview than Shakurian in the Blood. And I think that's what it's not just a like a cultural as much as it is like a as you're saying, like the black and white, it's a worldview difference, and that's what serves as the stumbling block for them in the middle of the book, and so that's why I was so connected, because I was like, I really want to see if Keller will pull it off, or if Shakurian will pull a mutiny, or because I didn't know how this was going to go.
Yeah, I guess it could have gone a lot of different ways if we ever got more Challenger books after this.
And I was just looking at Goodreads, and this one by far has the fewest ratings.
Oh,
and yeah. So I would be willing to guess that this was meant to be like a test to see if this book was super popular, if people were going to, they were going to said, all right, this one's super popular, therefore we're going to do a spinoff Challenger series now. And then this one just didn't do that well. And they said, all right, we're going to just leave a lie.
Yeah, we're going to nix it. I wonder too, like, just look in the back. This is actually, this is after New Frontier already started. So like New Frontier already had 11 books out, actually 13 books out by the time this one came out. So like, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it was like they'd already proven that they could do standalone non TV show. Yeah. Focused. And you know, this one, it's just so out there. And yeah, like I think, you know, and actually, as we're talking about too, I'm getting a lot of Deep Space Nine vibes from it, just with the kind of darkness and the real kind of deep, like you're saying, like worldview stuff that we get in Deep Space Nine that we don't really get in some of the other Star Treks that really could have been interesting to explore. But I think one of the drawbacks of this particular setting is just that it's so far away from Federation. It is out on the frontier. It is characters and alien species that we don't know anything about. And you know, at some point you gotta wonder, do we care? I mean, like New Frontier had a lot of characters that we'd seen before, either on TV or, you know, right, their books and stuff, but you know, this is completely new. Everything is brand new. And so like that's where maybe they were kind of taking a deeper dive into this test, saying like, how far can we take Star Trek and still get a readership from it? And unfortunately, I think this one kind of showed maybe that, yeah, we need to stick to some familiarity in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, going back to, because they're kind of introduced a tiny bit in the first part, but mm-hmm. then they're introduced a lot more in the second part, is Rieta and her people. And we have this kind of expectation of dying young, and how they don't have, it's not that they don't have a long lifespan, it's that just a lot of people just die. And so there was one comment that I thought was funny, is that one of the characters was like, yeah, we, that person's 40. It's like a grandma, and you've already child and grandchild have already, you know, passed in the fighting. Yeah. And there's comments about how if you live old enough to be an older person, you know you're dangerous because you've survived all this stuff, so you know all the tricks and stuff. And it made me so sad for that species, that it was like that they lived in such a harsh environment. And so when they go through the gateway, I'm like, yes, you can find out about the Federation, settle in Belthair or something, and you guys will have a better life. And then they're dealing with all the stuff in the third act, and I was like, maybe not.
Well, that's just another place where I feel like she did a really good job. Diane Carey did a really good job of world building, because yeah, I felt when we're on their planet, and again, this is another section that was like, they were kind of only there for a blip in the first third of the book, and even kind of not even there till through the middle of the book in some ways. But in kind of the glimpses that we got into their life on this planet, like, this is where I think she brought a lot of fantasy in to it, because yeah, of the type of world they were living on, which is like all metal.
Yeah.
And then they've got to like lure these kind of floating beasts down to the ground so that they can try to kill them, because I think that was like they're trying to store up energy, and then there was food involved somehow. And, you know, they got their hierarchy and the elders, like you were saying, but, you know, it wasn't clear at first. I think she did a decent job, like kind of burying the lead in a pretty good way, as far as, not really explaining that they were going to go through a gateway, you know, mm-hmm. to like yeah, a space gateway. But that's why, like, that they were trying to get back to some previous like home planet, that this was not their native planet. I mean, we got that right to some extent, but, you know, I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, these people had lives like that. You could kind of understand where they were coming from, you know, and what their places were, and a lot of that came with her and her friend Man, I'm terrible. Like, the names of this book are tough.
The names in this book, yeah.
Started with an L, Lunti or something like that. They would have a lot of discussions because they both kind of butted heads somewhat. And so that was a good way to get some of this information. But once we get to that point where they've come through the gateway, they found the goat, or the, not the ghost ship, the grave ship, the Pompeii, which I liked that name for.
Yes, I love the name of the Pompeii. That was great.
That was a good one. And find out that they, like, this is where their dead go. Like, they go through basically through a gateway. They're sent through a gateway and then they're embalmed on this ship. And so which we already knew they were corpses. I just thought that was an interesting way to, like, start tying these kind of two very different stories together with, like, stuff happening, you know, on the Challenger, on the ship and everything, but then also on, you know, the Ryuta's planet and where they're coming from.
Although I do wonder, we've now seen this in two out of the two books we've read. Oh, there's this mystery of the gateway and the people surrounding it, whether it's on the planet or on the ship. Oh, people show up. Oh, you happen to be the same species. Great, you can explain this stuff for us. I'm like, I wonder if that's going to be recurring or not in later books. That's just a part of every book that they decide to do.
Probably. now that you mention it. I did think it was actually... I liked this one... I liked the use of the gateway in this one more than the first one. Cause in the first one, it was just kind of this thing that was there.
Yeah.
Which actually, I want to say that in the first one, it kind of showed up very much towards the end of it. Like,
towards the end. Yeah.
Like, oops, we got to put the gateway in here. This one, it was a bigger part of the story.
Yeah.
It
was also literally bigger because it was in space and was, yeah. You know, the first gateway I envisioned kind of like a cover, like just like the, like a doorway almost.
Yeah.
Whereas this gateway, as they're describing it, I'm like, that's like multiple ships can fit through that thing.
Yeah. Well, and there's kind of a little picture of it on the cover, like this giant ring, but which I thought was like, wow, it's bringing out the big guns in the second book, this like space sized gateway, but then she's still using like the doorway one. So, you know, and I was hoping that we would find out that this is the same species from the first book, the Petra.
I was hoping that too.
Yeah, but we didn't get that. In fact, we just got another, like, so far these books are not connected at all, except that they both have these doors to some other place. Doors into chaos, if you look at the next title. But
I do wonder if the authors were reading the other, like, obviously the editors were. Ordover and probably Greenberger as the series creator, I would hope.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, were Susan Ryan, Diane Carey, and all the rest, were they reading the others' books as they were writing, or were they writing them totally independently? Or because obviously this is before the this is before the post-Nemesis stuff, or at least around when the post-Nemesis is just taking off. So they haven't established that interconnected universe in the same way. But at the same time, it's like you have this series and there should be a strong through line of the series. And maybe the argument is it's all in the seventh book. We'll all get there in book seven when all the short stories tie it up together.
Yeah.
But I was hoping, maybe this is just me, I was hoping that Kirk was, it was going to be, hey, there's this other Starfleet captain in the gateway too. And that'd be it. And it'd be like, oh, that's Kirk. Okay. So the gateways lead to the same place or something.
Yeah.
But that's not what we got.
No, because he went through in a ship at the end, so he's definitely not in the same place. But, you know, I was wondering about that, too, because in the New Earth books, Kirk was a big part. Like, Kirk and the Enterprise-A crew were a big part of it, and I think it was the Enterprise-A, but it was the movie era anyway. Mm-hmm. And thinking back, I can't quite remember if Keller met Kirk, but I'm pretty sure he did. But that would have been interesting, too, because we got some timey-wimey stuff in this one, too, with the... I feel like that was one thing that was really hard to understand, was how much time was passing with Ryuta and the living, like her people. It's like they made it sound like 11,000 years, but then it was like Shakurian's father went through a gateway, actually the space gateway, 20 years before, but then his corpse was 11,000 years old. So is it the time was going slower, or did they go into the past? But at any rate, I was kind of wondering and hoping that he would go through the gateway which I guess now we're finding that the books just kind of end once they go through the gateway, and we don't know what's on the other side yet or what lay beyond. That's how these books are all ending, and that's what the seventh book is called. But yeah, like, and seeing the younger Kirk or something, because that was like during season three of Star Trek, and this Challenger series takes place during the movie era, you know. So I think that would be interesting to see, like, if these crossover, because I know in the Deep Space Nine one that's coming up, that takes place post finale Deep Space Nine, so we've got like,
oh really?
Yeah, it's because on the cover is Char, the Andorian, and
yeah,
I can't remember if there's a Hirogen on the front or if it's Tyranitar.
I will look.
Oh yeah, I think I want to say it's a Hirogen, because I feel
it's a Hirogen on the cover for the DS9 one.
Because I remember at some point, but I also know there's another Deep Space Nine where Tyranitar fights a Hirogen. I think that's in Warpath.
Yeah, it's in Warpath.
But so we've already got some interconnectedness with the Deep Space Nine one. I don't know when during the series or when during the movies or whatever the Next Generation or Voyager or any of those take place, but I'm pretty sure with Voyager it's during their time in the Delta Quadrant, like during the series. But
it would almost have to be, because they weren't done with Voyager yet. With the show when these were coming up, because these were 01,
This is 01, yeah. So this is during the show. That's right. That's weird. That's weird to think about, though, that it was post Deep Space Nine. Like, I forgot that Deep Space Nine ended in like 99 or 98 or something like that.
Yeah. What was it, 99 or 2000? Anyway, it was around that time.
Yeah. So it was, so yeah, it's, I'm, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to seeing where these go and how they connect, because we're also in this place right now where we're in like pretty far back in time compared to the rest of the series.
Yeah.
So like they have to be kind of careful, I guess, in these first books, because in the next ones, like when we get to the Next Generation book, that one really has the ability, if it's set during the series, which I think it probably is, or maybe, you know, sometime in the movie era, but we have more of an ability to really start linking the stories than we do in this one that's so far removed in time. So,
but there was a thematic link that I thought was interesting, whereas there's one moment where the different characters are in different places, and one of the characters is on the planet, and one of the characters is on the ghost ship. I think it was Savannah that was on the ghost ship. Mm-hmm. And then you had one character on the main ship. And I think, if I'm trying to remember, because it's been a couple of days since I read this, I think it was Shikorian on the ship, and it was on Challenger. And I think, was it Keller that was on the planet? I'm remembering. But what I remember is there's a scene where he's negotiating with someone, and there's a comment like, why do you need this? And when they were going through that negotiation, all I could think of was, what does God need with a starship?
Oh.
And I was like, I don't think she's meaning to reference that, but I really wonder if that's the case.
Oh, that's interesting. Because, I want to say that might have been when Ryuta had come onto the Challenger through the gateway, like just the doorway on the bridge. And so
it was after that, yeah.
Yeah, because like Savannah and a couple other people were on the grave ship.
The grave ship.
Mm-hmm. And he was basically trying to like negotiate for them to even just come back at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's funny, because this would have taken place, I mean, within a few years after that,
right, that movie. Exactly.
So that's funny.
There was the book dramatically increased the POVs and the number of events and jumping back and forth at the end.
Yeah.
And I felt that was kind of a harm to the book, because you already have a harder sell of a book, and they really, in my opinion, she should have just stuck with Keller and maybe the Rietta. Mm-hmm. And that should have just been the two. And you don't have any more POVs than that. But because the POVs expanded and they were all in different places and they're in, it's all this alien technology, the end of the book just kind of became a blur to me, because I was like, I'm trying to keep up with all of this and there's so much going on.
I'd agree with that. Like, and actually by the end of it, I think we were talking on the other side of the page that the exposition at the end, like in that last third of the book, was just so much, because I think, you know, to her credit, Diane Carey created this pretty amazing world, you know, that, mm-hmm. that we're reading about or whatever, between Ryuta's and Keller's and everybody's. And even just this mystery of the grave ship. And then mm-hmm. I think it was once Savannah came back or somebody came back, like they'd finally basically done some sciencey things. And she's just reporting to Keller about the history of the living and the anointed, and how one of the corpses is actually Shikorian's father. And I mean, it's mm-hmm. pages and pages of exposition, just, you know, really just from Savannah reporting to Keller so that we all have the history.
Right. Yes, that's, yeah. It's one of those devices where it's not just for the character's benefit. Yeah. It's also for the audience's benefit. And to have that, it's not always great to have that kind of level of exposition at the end of a book,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, at the end is when you should feel like everything's making sense on its own, and you're just, you know, the action's ramping up and stuff. And the exposition traditionally needs to be more towards the beginning. And I mean, it kind of is at points, but you were right. There was a lot at the end, which I think hurt its pacing.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I feel like all of this was essentially culminating in Keller kind of becoming the leader that he needed to be. But mm-hmm. I kind of alluded to it earlier that I didn't really like the way he went about it, because he just basically told everyone, I'm the captain or I'm the commander or whatever. You have to obey my orders no matter what. And he just kept drilling it home, like, you will do exactly what I say. And I mean, he was a little bit like Kirk, I guess, in some ways. But, you know, he was just, I didn't really necessarily get the impression that he was learning much. I mean, he did, because of the interactions with Shikorian and with, I think it was Zoa or whatever her name is. And, you know, some of the others, and just like kind of realizing that he has to earn the trust. But then at the end of the day, he comes out like, no, I've earned it by becoming commander, so you just have to obey me. And like, I didn't care for that as much. But then we get to really taking a page from the book of Kirk, where he has got a plan. He's not going to tell anybody about it. He's just going to say, you know, you have to follow my orders. And he's going to execute that plan himself, you know, putting his own life in line, you know, in the line. And, you know, and again, it's just like, he's expecting everybody to follow him, which they do, which is good. But like, you know, it's just like, he's got to be, and this is the point of these books too, we got to get the kind of commander captain person in that position where they're the only ones that can go through. So that was,
I wonder what's going to happen to Picard.
Exactly. Right. And so it's like, you know, this one, at least he, I feel like, kind of, once he learned about Ryuta and her people and the fact that, like, him kind of fighting against her and then also using the anointed against her was actually sabotaging her people's ability to come back to this side of the gateway, which was their original home to begin with. And he's like, oh, no, like, I got to go. I need to go rectify this and, like, you know, get them to come back over, which, again, it's like, why does it have to be you? But, you know, we got to get them over there. And, you know, Kirk was just following, I don't remember her, it wasn't, I want to say Kalinda, but that's not it. But whatever her name was in the first book, we'll find out again in book 7. You know, he was chasing after somebody, basically like an enemy. This time, Keller was going to try to do good, even though his own life was being put on the line for it. So that was kind of a little bit redeeming, but at the same time, it was just like, it's a lot of lead up to kind of a ho-hum cliffhanger.
Right, yeah. I was particularly impressed by the cliffhanger. I was just like, okay, we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
I've kind of seen the cliffhanger before.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess with all these books, we know that they're all going to, well, I don't know about Keller because we're never going to see him again. But like,
you assume they're all going to survive, including Keller, because that'd be a weird thing to kill him and only him, keep everyone else alive. That's why they didn't do any more books. They killed the main character.
Yeah. Right. And then, you know, anything can happen.
Right. So what would you be your rating for the book?
You know, I can't remember what I rated the first one, but this one, I really actually did enjoy it. This was a lot easier to get through than the first one. Like this one, I really wanted to pick it up and everything. So I would give this one 3.5 out of 5 stars. It was, there was enough about it that was like, as good as she did setting everything up, I think it could have been a little bit better and kind of almost ignore some of the stuff that happened in the New Earth books or whatever, but also prepare the readers for who they're reading about. But also just kind of the, you know, like we talked about that whole third act, it was a little too fast, a little too much happened. Yeah. I wouldn't want to necessarily the book to be longer, but, I think some stuff could have been trimmed down and other stuff could have been, you know, spread out a little bit more. I mean, yeah, I almost wanted to give this one a 4 on Goodreads, but I think it's going to be a 3 with a 3.5.
So, like, I really liked the middle portion and even some of the beginning, but man, that ending, like, this is how much, like, it just didn't work. So there is a movie reviewer named Jeremy Johns, and in some of his videos, he'll talk about, like, his rating and his review, and one of his ratings is, I will forget this movie in T-minus 4 days. And I always thought, how could you forget the movie in 4 days? Like, you just saw it. Oh my goodness. I forgot the ending of this book, and I just read it like 4 days ago. So I'm like, oh dear. So this is the first time I've felt that way. So like, yeah, the beginning, middle, pretty solid, but the end did not work. So I'm leaning at a 2.5 out of 5, which is about what I gave the first one. Like the first one, it doesn't work as well, but it's like short and fast and concise. Mm. Whereas this one works better for the most part, but I think it, like, this one has higher highs than the first book. I think it also has lower lows, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah.
So they kind of balance out, whereas the first book was just mid the whole way through.
The whole way, yeah. You know, and actually I think too, as I'm thinking about this book compared to the other New Earth books, this is probably my favorite of all of the New Earth books. Just because something's actually happening with this ship that they built, and like, yeah, I can't really tell you much of what happened in the New Earth books. Like, there's a few tidbits still in my brain, but that last book when they built the ship, I forgot that they built it out of spare parts and other ships and everything. Like, for some reason, I thought it was one of the ships that was part of the colony. So, you know, like, I just feel like this one did a better job of keeping my interest, I think, than those other ones. Well, we are 2 down.
Yep.
5 to go on the Gateways books. And we've got the Next Generation coming up next time.
Yeah, with Doors into Chaos by Robert Greenberger, who is the co-creator of this book series. So hopefully he will have a solid landing with this one. Yeah.
Assume he understood the assignment.
Yes. Oh boy, it will be bad if he did not. But right. I'm hoping he will. I enjoyed his 2 Time 2 books. I enjoyed those.
Oh, see, those are ones that I've read so long ago I've kind of forgotten about too. Yeah. In fact, I don't even remember. I remember some of the stuff that kind of led into the post-Nemesis books, but nothing specific. It'd be nice to get into the Next Generation again too. I feel like we've done quite a bit of original series era for a while now, actually. So yeah, it'll be nice to kind of get to the more pseudo modern day, I guess, modern day for when I was growing up, I guess.
Exactly.
But until then, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
You can find my YouTube channel, Jonathan Cohn. You can find my Goodreads, which is Jonathan Cohn, and my Twitter account, which is Jonathan Cohn. So I'm nice and consistent in all those places.
Nice. I'm pretty consistent. I'm at Knitting Trekkie pretty much anywhere, I'm most active on Goodreads and Letterboxd, although I haven't watched very many movies recently either. And I poke around on Twitter and Blue Sky and Facebook and what Instagram, I guess. I don't post on there like ever, but yeah. So, but that's about it. And I'm really looking forward to next time. I can't wait to get into it. But until then, thank you everybody for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading? To each his own, number one.